We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling. Hi, everybody.
I'm Nick Kane.
And I'm Lauren Bailey.
And thanks for listening.
And welcome to podcast 14.
14. We're into our teens.
Yeah, that's a
great,
pretty lovely number. Do you remember? I don't particularly remember 14.
Yeah, I don't think really life was very hard at 14, to be honest. So that's a good thing for the number 14, isn't it? That we're, you know, young and untroubled, maybe.
Young and untroubled. Awesome. Well, how are you? Are you feeling young and untroubled this month, Nick? How's the month been for you?
Well, it's been an interesting month. I did want to report back. I did speak about creating a space conducive to your work last month. And I just wanted to report in.
And I did just ask from my little recording window where it particularly is that you are. It looks interesting.
I am in my office that I spoke about last time, about needing to look at this space and see if I could add a bit of love to this space, make it a bit more of a creative space. I am not very happy to report that nothing has happened on that front. Yeah. There has been no movement. And I think it's about being honest too, isn't it? You know, sometimes we have great months where we feel really proactive and other months we don't. And I think this month is one of those months that I felt a little like an unlaunched rocket.
That's really interesting to me, because certainly from, and again, this is that thing of outside perspective, but for me, looking at your life, it looks like you've been doing possibly too much, but lots of awesome things.
True. I mean, I think there's a difference between what's happening day to day and what is considered proactive work. So I have been busy day to day, but I feel like I've been chasing my tail. A lot of that proactive stuff that I really love to do every month, like this month, I was really hoping to make this space a really enjoyable place to be, but I haven't got around to it, you know? But yeah, I have. I guess I have been busy, you know. I finished Neighbours only a week ago, which means that this is literally my first week where I've been able to just be in Sydney. That's a lovely thing, just getting used to the energy. Travelling can be quite exhausting as well. And I think that this week, because travelling can be so exhausting and I was feeling every second for you know, 2-3 months really, I never really got an opportunity to switch off. So this week has been about sitting in the Sydney energy, switching off. I've been watching a few TV series, Lauren, that is my way of switching off, basically. So it's been a really lovely week for that, because sometimes we need to recharge the batteries. And I feel like I'm at that stage at the moment.
Yeah, that's really interesting for me. I know you have more to talk about for your month, but I guess I'll just check in with something that's at the top of my list for the month, is this feeling of, that's right. The main thing I'm grappling with right now is how to be accountable for my own schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And it involves a lot of this feeling like I'm doing things, but also I was just saying to someone not long before we recorded, I feel like on one hand, life is great. I know what needs doing. I'm doing some of it, but I also feel like I've had time to do it. And then as soon as I'm into everything, I then feel like I'm running late for the next thing and I'm actually chasing my tail. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how, I don't know, for me, there's a big focus at the moment on how to get your schedule to work for you, which sounds like maybe that's something similar in a different way to what you're going through.
Yeah, I think that's one of the hardest things about what you're doing and as a professional artist and managing that schedule. It is hard to do, and sometimes you feel like you're chasing your tail, but I think it's just to keep positive through that, because you think you're chasing your tail, but you're probably actually getting a lot done.
Is that your takeaway? Like, is that what you're learning?
I think it's more about you need to be able to switch off. You need to take time to recharge the batteries, which has been this week.
What have you been watching?
You know what I did watch recently, and it got me every time. I would cry in every episode.
Oh, goodness.
And it was a great series called Derek by Ricky Gervais. He's the lead actor in that. And he plays a beautiful character where he is one of the wardens at an old people's home. And it's just beautiful because the character is just such a beautiful character. And the way that he tells stories, Ricky Gervais, he's just such a supreme storyteller. Yeah. He just knows how to do it.
And he's clearly a really wonderful person as well. You know, following him on Twitter and seeing, you know, obviously he's funny, but he has a lot of heart and just some of the conversations he's been having about animal activism.
He's got strong convictions, it's fair to say. Lauren, I forgot to talk about this. This is one thing I did do proactively. Yeah. I was so lucky to be invited to a premiere screening of a new Australian TV series called Subject to Change. It was a pilot episode that they premiered. Yeah. And I was lucky enough to be taken along and invited by Hilary Stevens, who had a lot to do with the project. It basically follows same-sex attracted lead characters. It's a coming-of-age narrative that will confront the harsh difficulties faced in suburban Australia by following young adults as they deal with their complex and conflicting emotions. It can be a rocky road to love and inclusion through their final years of high school. The most beautiful thing about this pilot was the tone that they used throughout, because it was like Neighbours, to be honest.
Wow.
I reckon it would sit in a 6:30 time slot, which this kind of content has never on Australian TV sat at a 6:30 time slot.
Certainly having seen what you posted online and then going and doing my own research to find out what you've been out at and talking to you about it, it sounds like a brilliant concept. And it's so interesting that you say it is a lot like Neighbours, because some of some of those topics, when they're dealt with in stories in our society, the storytellers can try to be quite confrontational with the work to shake people up.
Yes.
So it sounds like that's a bit of a different angle on it.
Definitely. And it makes it accessible and it starts to bring it into the national conversation as well. So I really hope, I know they wanted to have good news in regards to when it might be shown on TV screens, but I'm following it closely. So as soon as they do have a date and a channel, I'll let you know.
Fantastic.
What about your month, Lauren? What have you been up to? Talk to me.
Well,
we don't get to talk as much. This is kind of our chat now. Because I'm in Sydney, you're in Melbourne. This is our monthly catch-up now, isn't it?
Well, it is actually really, really interesting. I hadn't written anything about this, but I'm kind of really glad that you say that, Nick. Because, you know, as we've said, we are really keen to make sure that the podcast continues and we're excited by the possibility of getting to talk to storytellers and finding out about the culture in Sydney and across Australia. But in small ways, I have really noticed your absence. I don't want to sound too cheesy, but I guess, you know, our first year of podcasting and we really got into our vibe and I've learned so much about recording and editing and interviewing. And it's been interesting for me doing last month's interview with Rob on Skype, and I was sort of the third man. And feeling how that vibe is different. You know, and so that's obviously learning new skills.
It's like, it is a new skill, and it's like any creative partnership when the dynamic changes, when you can't physically be in the same space all the time, it does change the dynamic and you have to get used to that.
I have had this month of being accountable to myself, and because I'm still at this point where I'm trying to, where my journey is about finding out what happens next, and I want acting to be a large part of that, but I'm also open to other creative endeavours. I've been trying to go to as many seminars and do training and just continue that exploration. And so some things I've done this month have been awesome. I went to the Open Channel Framed Seminar with the series producer Tamazin Simpkin and series social media manager Zoe Harold for The Catering Show. I don't know if you're familiar with this, the web series?
Kate McLennan, and I'm trying to think of the other girl's name. But it's a comedy series,
it's two,
correct?
I think it's two Kates.
Yes, two
and
Kates.
And it's a fantastic web series that came out earlier in the year. And this seminar was so brilliant. Just really practical, hands-on, them talking about how the Cates approached them, how they developed the show, how long that took, where they applied for funding, how they got it, what they still needed to do in terms of getting finance, how they decided to launch the show platform. Like, oh, so exciting. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad I made it to that. I've also been to some grants info sessions.
Wow.
And an interesting seminar on disruption in business.
Talk to me about that. That sounds confrontational. What is disruption?
We're talking about disruption is things that are outside our control.
Yeah.
So let's say I want to sell T-shirts and the material I use for the, I've been making T-shirts for 20 years and I've used the same cotton for the T-shirts. And then there is something that happens either economically or socially, a natural disaster, or politically in the country where that material was sourced. Mm-hmm. And I can no longer get that material for my T-shirts. That disrupts my entire business. Mm. But we now live in a world where disruptions, big and small, are happening faster and faster. Mm. And rather than going, oh no, that changes the whole nature of my business, how do I handle that? It's going, okay, disruption could happen any minute. How do I welcome that and use it to my advantage? And the idea that came out of this seminar was not only to be ready to fail, but find the way your current system fails and have that as your goal is to find the way your idea fails. And then you'll have another idea and find the way that fails. And that's the way to drive yourself forward. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's something that is sort of really practical in a business sense. And I'm coming in as an actor and going, okay, now how does that apply to me as an individual?
That's great that you could
and
use
the way I promote myself. And yeah,
it's great that you could make that connection too, because I do. It's a very clear connection of how you could use that as using yourself as the business and how you can approach things, because there will be disruptions like in business as in life. So how you deal with those is very important. And being, once again, I said this at the start of the podcast about being proactive. And that is very much being proactive and making sure that you're prepared for future events.
Before we go into talking about today's interview, I just want to talk about something that has been present throughout my month, and that I was at an event last night and came up for me again. And I thought, oh, I might just introduce that to the podcast and see what you think and what our listeners think. And it is this idea of when you meet someone new and they say, what do you do? And I've noticed recently, because I'm really interested in what everyone's doing and if it's their passion and if you know, how they're getting where they want to be, if they're disrupting themselves. But people often, if you ask someone what they do, they often hesitate, or they might change the topic, or they might say, oh, well, you know, sort of self-deprecatingly make an excuse as they're saying what it is. Oh, I'm an accountant, but that's not very interesting. Oh, I do this, but it's not what I really want to be doing. And for the flip side, I'm getting asked a lot in my life what I do.
Yeah, what is your answer?
And I'm saying I'm shaping it daily.
Yes.
But, you know, I say, well, I'm a freelance creative professional. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends, a person I was speaking to yesterday, said, well, why don't you just say you're an actor?
Well, that really limits it, doesn't it?
Well, and I said, well, because it's not the only thing I want to be doing. But also, I said, if I did say I was an actor, then I could expect someone to say to me, oh, well, what are you working on at the moment? And if I say, well, actually, if at the time I said, well, actually, I'm auditioning at the moment and I've got a couple of short film projects I'm working on that I'm trying to get some movement on, they go, oh, okay. So how are you making money? You know, and it just, it's... I just find, I don't know what your, what would you say if someone said to you, what do you do? What's your answer currently?
I do say I'm a creative professional, which actually the same as you. It works for an actor. Yeah. It works for being a creative producer. It works for being a podcast host. But the next step into that is, well, okay, well, what does that mean usually? And I don't mind saying, well, I'm an actor, I'm a creative producer, and you know, I'm a podcast host, all those kind of things. And then what actually usually happens is they find one that they're interested in, whether it be an actor or what's a creative producer do, or a podcast. That's interesting. And from there, I can actually trail down into that conversation.
Yeah.
So it's almost like this little game now for me where you basically say, I'm a creative professional, and let them lead the conversation where they find most interest. Because at the end of the day, I could talk about everything that I do, but it'd probably be 2 hours and people would be bored.
Oh, no. but it is really interesting. So I feel like as I become clearer on what I'm doing and what I want to be doing and more excited about that, I've noticed more when I ask other people the same question, I've noticed more hesitancy at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something really interesting. And I think I might continue this theme over the next few months. I imagine it's something that will stay present for me.
Yeah.
So
I love it. Yeah. See if there's any other solutions.
Yeah. Or even just that is my answer, but I guess having more confidence in what I'm saying. You know, the underdog in Australia, it's such a prevalent idea culturally for us about, saying owning what you do and feeling good about it. And I feel bad for enjoying myself. I don't know.
Own what you do, Lauren.
I am not putting that message out there to the universe. I feel really great about what I'm doing. So it's really interesting for me how we label it when we talk about it in conversations to each other.
I tell you who is also owning what they're doing. A performer that we're going to sit down with right now, an inspiring performer called Anne Truong. Anne is an actress who has a crazy amount of motivation and drive, and it was an honour to sit down and chat with her. So let's listen in.
Let's get to it. We are here today at the meat market in North Melbourne with the very wonderful Anne Truong, and we are going to find out a bit about her.
Yes. Welcome, Anne. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks.
How do you feel?
I don't know.
Now, you said you were a little nervous, Anne, about this because you don't like talking about yourself.
I never talk about myself publicly.
Well, this is a good opportunity.
Well, we're not actually in public.
That's true.
Not yet.
And once again, I'm in Sydney, but you're at the meat market, which is that lovely place in North Melbourne, built in the 1880s. Why are we in the meat market today, Anne? Have you got a bit of a connection with the meat market?
I do. So I'm actually performing a circus show here later this year, and I've performed here previously as well.
So have you done circus here before? Or?
Yes, there was a circus show.
Is it a bit of a hub for?
It's a bit of a hub because the rigging, like circuit spaces, are quite limited in the city, and all the rigging here is pretty good for it.
Oh,
perfect!
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, when I
start my latent circus career, I'll know where to go.
Well, this will be my first circus show in maybe 2 or 3 years.
Oh, we'll have to.
Well, don't give too much away.
No,
we
need
to hear your story first, right?
Yeah.
So, Anne, could you share your story? And I'm sure it'll come to the circus performance along the way.
So it took me a little while to find acting. I grew up in a conservative Vietnamese family, and like other Asian parents, they wanted me to become a lawyer or a doctor. So they were thrilled when I got into law, but then quite disappointed when I decided to pursue psychology. I was 3 to 4 years well into my PhD before they came round, which unfortunately for them was also around the time I decided to quit academia and head dived into acting. I secretly began acting classes during uni as a personal challenge, but kept going because I never wanted to stop experiencing what these classes gave me. The thought of being an actor never occurred to me. I just loved doing it. My teacher, on the other hand, kept insisting I give psychology up and pursue acting instead because he was confident that I'd work. I laughed because, to me, actors weren't real people. I just thought Bruce was exercising his rights to be an irresponsible arts teacher. He never gave up insisting. It took 3 years for his words to finally penetrate and for me to start seeing acting as a possibility. If I could experience what I got out of these classes every moment of my life, then why wouldn't I? I was still adamant on finishing my thesis, though, as a backup plan. But there was a moment when I realised I didn't need it. And so I stopped my thesis, quit my job, and began being an actor.
Yay! I love that story.
What an interesting journey you've had throughout the years. It's a really exciting journey. And you started the journey in Footscray. What was that like?
Yes, I did. Because my parents were refugees from the 70s, and when they came to Melbourne, they were in I don't know what you call it, some kind of housing, and then eventually met each other, moved to Footscray, and started one of the first Vietnamese restaurants in Melbourne, in Footscray.
Is it still going?
So they recently retired.
Left the business.
But they were working 7 days a week. And so I didn't see my parents much growing up. But, you know, the pressures to bring home all the A pluses and be academic and play, you know, I was one of those Asian kids that would rock up to school with my violin, my keyboard, my guitar, my sports bag. So they wanted, because they came over here with nothing. And so they wanted me to have everything.
Did either of them have any particular creative interests of their own that you think influenced you at an early age?
Well, I was quite primed to be a lawyer because I was a bit squeamish about blood. So they were okay about me being a lawyer. And Mum was very academic. Like, she got into uni but then had to leave the country. And she only found out that day, but she had to leave the country, so she didn't have an opportunity to study. And Dad was also going down the academic path, but he did have a very big interest in music and art, and lots of his friends are artists. And he loved to draw, so we'd draw together and paint together. He'd play the guitar. Yeah, so when I was a kid, I never thought I'd be a lawyer or a doctor because I was really struggling, because I love sports as well. I was really struggling between being a professional Olympian runner or an artist or a musician.
All three at once, basically.
Yeah, but I thought I had to choose one. As a kid, I didn't know. My parents only ever had one profession, so I thought it was only possible to be one thing. So I was quite stressed out about it.
And I think it's interesting too because, you know, you do have Vietnamese heritage and you've already spoken a little bit about how your parents and their heritage impacted you. But are there any things that, further things that impacted you as far as they came here as refugees and you've said that they wanted the best for you as well and they wanted you to go out there and do the best in this country. But was there any other factors that you felt influenced
me other than my family? Yeah. Identity, you know, was a big thing for me because, you know, I was the only... I don't know whether I'm going to be answering your question, but identity was a big thing for me, you know, with different cultures and the different cultures' stories. And because I was raised by my grandma as well, she was filled with stories, never-ending stories. So I love that. Mm. I was just very curious about people. I loved everything that I did. And so it was very, like, I was one of those people who had lots of interests. I loved science and maths, but I loved writing and I loved drawing and I loved...
And that's an interesting skill to develop too, this idea of curiosity. Mm. Because it's one of those things I think as a performer and as a storyteller you need to have. Because if you're not curious, then how can you help talk or show people the world as a storyteller or as an actor? So being curious is very important and probably set you up for future years as a performer.
And through your grandmother and the stories that she told, did you feel like you still had a really strong connection to your Vietnamese background growing up here?
I did and I didn't. You know, my parents were quite strict, so I grew up in the house. So being with my grandma, that was my connection to my culture, but I didn't know anything else outside that.
And so... now I want to jump a little bit forward, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Because we do want to talk about what I've put here as life before acting.
Yes.
You do have a degree in psychology.
Yes.
Can you confirm this for
me? I can confirm that.
And so at that point, what you've done is you've gone, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to do psychology.
Yeah, because psychology, like, you know, it's very... because acting wasn't a possibility. Like, it just never occurred to me. Actors aren't real people. Right, you can't be an actor. A street person can't be an actor. They're the people I see on the big screen, and I read about. I read about in magazines. So, yeah. So psychology, like, was the closest to
the bridge.
The bridge. So it was like I could, you know, it was about being a human being. It was about studying the human psyche.
Well, it actually brings us to this bold life decision that you made to then go, you know what? Maybe I might leave that aside and become an actor.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that decision with us really quickly?
So, like I was saying, like in my story, it was my teacher who first planted the idea in my head that acting could be a real thing, that could be a possibility. Because I loved what I got out of it, you know, that sense of openness and that sense of calm that I never got anywhere else.
And can you trace the exact moment these secret acting classes you were having with this teacher who was so pivotal for you. Yeah. When was the exact moment that you were like, hell yeah, I'm gonna give that a shot?
To kind of start seeing the possibility took a little bit of time. But then when I went to him and I said, you know what, I'm going to give it a go, the next year I decided that I would take leave on my PhD. And sorry, time is very murky. Like, it's because I was doing so many things at once. I was performing and I was, so I don't know if it's in chronological order, but basically I said I'd give it a go. And I spent the next year learning about the industry, what the Australian film and TV industry was like. And then I really, because before I just went because I loved the experience, like went to classes for the experience. And then I decided to really put my focus in learning the craft and growing as an actor and just giving myself space to do that. So there was no pressure on a career. But then about a year later, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was less than a year, I was sitting there and I thought, oh, you know what, my PhD could be my ticket overseas, because if you get a PhD you can work in universities overseas, and I'd love to move to New York. True. And you know, for acting and stuff. And then there was this one day, and this was the moment I woke up and I was sitting in my lounge room with my coffee, and I decided to read a newsletter which I got sent about the topics in the area that I was studying, which I never read because I didn't read because I wasn't studying at this time. But I decided to open it because a thought crossed my mind. Maybe there's a job posting in there in New York. And then I opened up the newsletter and there was a job posting in New York that was perfect. It was in my area. It was pitched at people my level. It was just, I could apply for it. I could finish my thesis in the next few months. I could apply for it and be in New York, best circumstances, York in September.
As an academic in
psychology at a university. Wow. So it was at New York University. And I was like, wow. But then at the same time, I thought about it. I'm like, wait, an academic career is more than full time. It's not 40 hours a week. It's 60, 80 hours a week. It's a life. And I'm like, well, how do you go to auditions? I can't just take time off. I'm sure New York University wouldn't like that. So at that moment, I went, oh my God, I don't actually need my PhD, because my PhD will actually stop me from pursuing my acting career.
Oh, and isn't that a conundrum for so many people? I love to hear you say that, because it's like another person that's had that feeling of going, well, a full-time job, it's not just, as you said, Monday to Friday. It's more than that.
Yeah.
And it does stop you going to those auditions.
It's so true, Nick, because you know when you're trying to make a decision and you say to yourself, okay, make the decision hypothetically and then see how you feel about it, and you try to cheat yourself into an ultimatum. You were doing all this work on all these areas to try to make something come to fruition, and all the time thinking about what you wanted to do and putting all that energy into what will my future be, means that life gave you the actual ultimatum.
Yeah. And it gave you the perfect scenario too, the scenario that you wanted.
Yes.
And you chose to not do that, which obviously says that acting meant more to you.
Yeah, and it took me a while, like even though then I decided to be an actor and it sounds so easy, but it took me quite a while to be an actor and not someone who was trying to be an actor.
Yep.
So that was a process too.
Can I ask how your parents took that conversation when you said, I won't be continuing with my thesis, I want to become a full-time actor?
I didn't tell them. So
Rebel.
It took me a little while to tell them. It was until I started getting professional work that my parents were like, oh, how's your studies coming along? And I'm like, oh yeah, all right. They're like, oh, so you'll finish in about a year? And every year it was another year. I'm like, yeah, yeah. And then eventually they're like, how are you fitting circus performing and acting and stage work and your studies in? How are you fitting it in? And I was like, yeah, I'm not studying. So that was the conversation.
And so your performance portfolio does feature both your acting showreel and your circus kickboxing reel. And according to your CV, you have skills in Chinese, pole, adagio, trapeze. I'm not sure how to say these. Is that
tissue?
Tissue.
Yeah.
And cordelis.
Yes. Oh,
is that the silks?
Yes, it is. Well, I feel so important that you stalked me.
We stalk all our guests.
Yeah, we stalk them.
Where does your training as a circus performer fit into all of this? I know you said you were really interested in sport.
It was my brother's birthday one year, and I wanted to do something interesting for him. So I took him to a circus show. There was a Europe troupe that was coming to town called Seven Fingers. Yeah, so it was just me and my brother, and I'm not sure about the other siblings, but I'm pretty sure they were there. No, they were there. And the opening scene was this, you know, really dramatic music, and then this guy running out on stage jumped onto the pole and climbed up this pole spiraling without his legs, just with his arms. Mm. And it was just, you know, this sense of whoa, wow in my chest. And
yeah.
The whole, you know, the rest of the show was amazing. Then we walked out of the theatre and my brother was like, wow, you know, I've got to take myself to more circus shows. And I was like, wow, I've got to do that. So then that's how I started.
Oh, that's great.
It's quite a big decision to go, great, I've got to have a go at circus.
Well, circus was always, you know, you can fit it in after hours. I don't have evenings and weekends. You can fit it in. Because most circus performers have some kind of day job. It's not like acting where you have to go, you know, unless you're studying NICA full time or something.
And then obviously the physical elements of circus, especially the ones that we've mentioned, are quite full on. So you need to be physically fit. How does those physical elements influence your acting work? And I guess also on the flip side, how does your acting influence the circus?
It's interesting actually because I'm working with my show later this year. I'm working with an amazing Chinese pole artist and I felt quite humbled. I'm like, oh, I don't know what I can offer to this. And then she reminded me of a few things. It doesn't matter about all those fancy tricks. It's what you personally can bring. What's your essence that you can bring? Suddenly this thing just clicked. Because as an actor, it doesn't matter what other people are doing. It's your essence that you can bring. Yeah, so I'm starting to bring what I know as an actor into my circus performance, which is really exciting.
Your sense of self and who you are.
Yeah, not just doing the tricks. I'm really excited about performing this year because I think it will be quite different to previous
years. You're bringing something new to it this year.
But that's the one thing I'm learning about acting, is that acting is everything. As in me sitting here with you guys, it's contributing to who I am and which will feed into my acting. If I have an audition and something happens during my day and I'm like, oh no, I've got to sit down and focus on my sides. Well, I've learnt that it's not like that because why can't your character have this in their world? It's all feeds in.
And I imagine the discipline of the circus training has also benefited your acting.
Yeah, because when I first started circus, what I loved about it was I didn't have the strength back then, but I was always strong because I started boxing when I was 18. And that was also because when I was a kid, I always wanted to do martial arts. I loved action movies. I loved, you know, kick-ass warrior roles. And my parents never wanted me to have that physicality and that strength. So when I had the money, when I was 18, I signed myself up to boxing classes. But anyway, let me go back to the question. When I first started circus, what I loved about it was, you know, there was a trick. I can't do this trick. Like, for example, learning to do the flag.
Yes. That's the one you were talking about before where you have to hang off the side of a pole.
Yeah, so you're on the pole and your arms...
You look like a flag.
You look like a flag. Your feet are out perpendicular to the pole and you're holding yourself up with just your arms. And, you know, that's not something that you can get overnight, you know, and it's not something you can get in a month or 2 months, but I knew that I'd get there, like if I just did it every day. You know, and so every day I'd try the flag and I wouldn't get it, but I knew that it was getting me that half a millimetre closer to the flag. And so it really taught me about not caring about the outcome and just being really happy and enjoy that moment and that process and gave me patience.
I was going to say, I'm really impressed with that it took you such a short amount of time to actually perfect the pole, because it took me at least 3 days to perfect it.
I haven't perfected the pole, just to put it out there.
I do the triangle, which is the pole and then the ground and then me. Sort of in between. Wow.
Let's have a look at specifically at some of the acting training that you've done then, because you've studied and you continue to study with some really influential teachers in Melbourne.
Yes. My first teacher, his name was Bruce Alexander. He was from the Melbourne Acting School.
I worked with him in London last year.
Yeah, he's fantastic. So we still keep in touch via Skype. And he was the teacher who told me within the first couple of weeks that I should just quit psychology. Yeah, so I worked with him and he really freed me up. And that was great. And then by the time I turned around and said, I'm ready for this, he was my only mentor. He was the only thing I knew, like, you know, my only
connection to
acting. And he was like, oh, I'm leaving Melbourne. I'm starting, you know, I'm moving to London. And I was devastated. But then I decided to learn the craft and I went to Richard Sorrell at the rehearsal room. And I also started doing short courses at Tafta with different directors and casting directors, you know, and then I started dancing classes. I kind of molded an acting course for myself in the sense that I knew movement was very important. So I started adult ballet classes and jazz classes, and circus was part of that. And, you know, I did some voice classes and I still work on my voice every week with Anna Macrossa-Nowen.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah. Had a lot of people come into my life at the right time. Like, you know, Bruce freed me up. Richard really taught me about the craft. And then John really taught me about the industry. And yeah, who also helped me with my first, you know, my first professional job. And then I had another mentor who came into my life, who's now a good friend, Andy McPhee. He reminded me of the artist, of the art of acting. And
fantastic.
So, you know, and so these things were always in my mind, but it just all came at the right time, I felt.
So, yeah, that's fantastic. I love that idea of moulding your own course or your own, you know, long term, like rather than having to go to a place like NIDA or Whopper. And I read an article this week actually stating that about creating your own course.
Oh, really?
and making sure that you're, and making sure that your regular training fulfills all the little goals that you need to, your needs as an artist. So that's really beautiful.
And do you believe that going forward, that regular training, continuing regular training is equally important?
Definitely, definitely. So if I'm not working, then I work on my craft every day. I will be doing something every day related to acting. Because, you know, most people go, oh, you're not working or something. But I work every day.
You're clearly very motivated, so maybe it's good to talk about where some of that motivation has got you so far.
And I think, yeah, that's a perfect time to talk about what seems to be one of the pivotal roles for you. It was the role of Agung. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Agung.
Agung in Channel 9's TV movie Chappelle.
Yes.
Which tells the story of the arrest of Australian Chappelle Corby in Bali in 2004. Do you consider this, in inverted commas, your big break?
Definitely. It was my, with your inverted commas, big break. Yeah. Do you want that story?
Yeah, how did you land the role?
Okay, you know, once I had decided to hone in on acting and study the craft, you know, I still needed to earn money. So I was working in a psychology-related job. And then eventually I went, you know, I've got to quit this job to pursue acting and, you know, just dive in. And it doesn't matter if I can keep... Anyway, I'll just get back to the point. The point is, yeah, so I quit my job and it was the last day of my job. It was a part-time job, but, you know, it's still quite momentous. And it just felt amazing that day. You know, my last day at work. Didn't know what tomorrow was going to bring, but felt good. And I went home, you know, I think I went out that night and then I went home, went to bed and I woke up and I looked at my email and this email had come through from John Orchick telling me about this role and he has got me an audition if I want it.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, wow. And he said, the problem is, like, auditions were already done. And this was, you know, Thea McLeod was presenting, like this was callbacks had already been done, second, third round callbacks. And Thea McLeod was having the exec meeting, I think it was on a Sunday. And he was like, you have to come in now to put it down. You know, so I was like, okay. And I went in there and he put down this tape for me. And I had a lot of fun with her and it got sent off. And Thea loved it, gave it to the execs on the 11th hour. It was a bit of a process. Like, I didn't find out until a bit later that I'd gotten the role. Yeah, and then I got it and my agents looked after me for that role and they signed me up. And, it was amazing because, the day I quit my job, because John had actually emailed me that night, Friday night. So the day I quit my job, that night an audition came through and that was my first professional role. And then, I found out and flew up to the Gold Coast, did it. It was amazing. It looked real. It felt, because it was humid as well, I felt like I was entering Bali every every time I went on set. Yeah, so, I didn't have a big role in that. That was a bit role. But it was just great to see a big production.
But it did seem as a catalyst because a few roles started to follow after that. First of all, there was a gig on Neighbours as Honor Taylor.
Oh, yes.
How did you find the difference from filming on a TV movie, if you will, to a TV soap? Was there a different process?
Yeah, completely. So when I was on Chappelle, it felt very cruisy. It felt, you had time. And, I could be there for almost a day and just shoot one, two scenes. But, it was very cruisy. And then when I went onto Neighbours, I walked into the studios and I didn't know where I was, but everyone on set already knew each other. I just kind of walked in there being the outsider, kind of just being a bit like, the cast were very friendly. And people would ask me afterwards, how was it? And I'd be like, actually, it was really quick. I got into the studios. They put me in makeup, put on my costume, put on my wardrobe. And when I went out there, you had the two cameras on you, the two close-ups at once, did one or two takes each, and it was over. Yeah. You were in, like, a scene was done in, like, 40 minutes, if that. Yeah. It was so quick, and then I was done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very quick.
Great to have that opportunity of working on two projects with really different time frames. And, of course, if you follow that further, the next thing you were cast in was in a fantastic production that's been shot here in Melbourne, supernatural TV drama Sonicsburg. Now you play the protagonist, Savannah.
Yes.
Oh wow,
this is weird, but you know all this. Yes.
It's on the internet. And the premise of the show sees you searching for the town of Sonicsburg, which is a mystery town in the woods.
Yes.
And your research lands you in a town called Mount Sunshine,
yes,
where things aren't all that they seem to be. So this sounds like, it sounds like a pretty meaty role.
Yeah.
And again, in a different story format.
Yes, because you're the lead in a series. And having, as an actor, most of us will get bit parts or these guest roles, and to be able to carry a story was amazing. Well, it's still amazing because we're still shooting. It started last year in July and we're still going. But, yeah, I've learned a lot on the set of Sonicsburg because I get to be on set every week and you get to practice your craft every week. I say I work on my craft every day, and I do. Like, I make sure that I'm training every day. I make sure that I'm writing every day. I make sure that I'm, doing all these things. But at the same time, it's to practice being in front of a camera in that in that context. You don't get that opportunity a lot. Yeah, so I to have that practice is amazing.
And your experience just keeps getting more complex, doesn't it? Because the next project that you were featured in was a feature film where, once again, you played the lead.
Yes.
And you went to filming in Vietnam. Now, let's talk about that experience, and not only that, but the demands of being the star, of course. I'm sure you wouldn't have many demands. But also the fact that you're shooting in Vietnam, another country, and a country that means so much to you too. That's quite an experience.
Yeah, it was interesting because I lost my grandma about in November last year, and she raised me. And so that meant, that is a really big thing in my life. So, yeah, I lost my grandma, and I booked as soon as I got this phone call saying my grandma passed, and I booked my flight to Vietnam in time for the burial. And I flew there and went into the village, saw the burial, then came out. You know, I was in and out of Vietnam in 3 days. And then the first week back from Vietnam, I got this audition that came through, and if I wanted the audition. And it was about this Vietnamese Melbourne girl who has rejected her culture and who hasn't seen her family in a long time. She gets a phone call saying that her dad has passed away in Vietnam, you know, and the dad's in a village. And the script was, she gets this phone call, she goes back, she flies into Vietnam, she catches the bus for 5 hours into a home village. And it was the exact same journey. So I knew I had to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I hadn't fully mourned for my grandma yet. And it was... if I had got this audition before my grandma passed away, I don't think I could have done the film the justice that I did. Well, I hope I did.
Yeah.
Going on the other side, I went to Vietnam and saw an amazing landscape. I went to places I'd never been before. So the whole thing was amazing.
I did actually now want to move on to talk about your aspirations for the future, Anne.
Yes.
And I wanted to put a little peg in the sand, if you will, and talk about how you feel about what you've accomplished so far as an artist. Do you feel like you've accomplished quite a bit in the industry? Have you got a lot more that you wish to explore?
When I stopped everything else, I really made sure that I'd be happy, because when I started classes, I just loved acting. And then when I stopped my uni and my work, I needed to make sure that I could stay... I never take for granted that tomorrow I'll be alive. And it's not because I said it to someone once and they thought it was very morbid, but it's not like that. As long as I'm the best person I can be right now, then I'm really happy and I feel like I've succeeded. So when I quit everything, I said, what will make me happy? And I had to make sure that I wasn't going to chase Hollywood, because... 2% of actors less work in Hollywood. So if that was my dream, I'll most likely be unhappy for the rest of my life. You know, I'd be constantly chasing something and not happy with where I am. So I said, all right, what it means to me to be happy is if I get to practice the craft in some way every day, if I get to have a meaningful social interaction that day, and I have a physical element in my life that day, then I'm truly really content and happy. And people go, oh, but then don't you want like dreams? You're not going to grow. And I said, but you are, every moment I will be growing, you know, I'm growing more and more. And if I am alive tomorrow, then I've grown even more. So I feel at each moment I am doing the most I can do and doing the best I can, and that's all I can ask of myself, and I'm really happy with that. Like, I know out there I am a nobody, but I feel like I've succeeded. I feel like I does that make sense? That makes sense, right?
Yeah, it totally makes sense, and I think you can genuinely see that in you, that you're happy with where you are, and that's, I think, a wonderful quality, especially moving into the future for everything that you do.
Yeah, like, it's been new. Like, you know, admittedly, I had to make sure that that ground was, you know, that I'd be happy right now. And now I am starting to have dreams and aspirations about working.
What do you want? What do I want next?
Which I've never, ever had before.
Isn't that the great thing when they talk about having your big goal? It's like, okay, well, I have an idea of what my big goals are, but the more I do what I want now, the clearer the next phase becomes and, you know, those goals shift. You say that you work on your craft every day, and I know that's something that I certainly try to do as much as possible. So I understand, you know, in the same way that we're like, oh, you quit your job and then you became you decided to become an actor, and, you know, it's not as easy as that. How do you stay motivated and focused?
I think acting as an art, so I practice the art every day, you know, and that's not hard because I love it. And it's not, I'm not there, I don't wake up and go, oh, okay, so I've got to do my voice exercises now, or I've got to do, you know, read this now, that. I just do it because they're actually genuinely things I love to do. And I don't wait for work to come. I make sure I always have projects, and that is, like, you know, creating my own projects. And collaborating is a good way of staying motivated. Yeah, so if you're working with other people on different projects, that keeps you excited.
If you could play any character from the films of the past, which character would it be and why?
It's a bit hard for me to answer, only because I think all roles are great roles. And one, I don't look to the past because I'm like, if it's already done or I didn't get cast, it's fine. It wasn't my role to do and I don't dream of doing it. That said, I would love to do an action role at some stage because, you know, I've wanted to play Mulan. I would love to do Mulan. You know, if you look into the story, there are so many themes that resonate for me. The story is about this Chinese warrior and she's a legend. You know, she was in a patriarchal society. She was the daughter of this family. So war came and her dad had to join the army. And her dad was quite old and frail. And so then she, during the middle of the night, stole his armor and dressed as a boy and then went off instead of him and pretended to be his son and enlisted into the army. And then she eventually saves the nation.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are lots of themes about family in there, about duty, about dreams, about being bigger than what society wants you to be, about defiance, about courage, you know, and it's physical. I love martial arts. So, you know, to be able to do all of that, you know, would be amazing. That said about Mulan, like I genuinely am happy with any character because I feel like all those traits in every character can be in any character. One thing I learned that I've kind of learned in acting and my psychology studies as well and just growing up, you know, becoming an adult, is that at the end of the day, if you strip back everything, we are all the same. Obviously, there are certain projects that would be amazing to be a part of, but at the end, every role really is amazing because you're still being a human being and everyone has a story.
Everyone has an amazing story.
Yeah, yeah, and I love that feeling of being able to shift and find that person in me and bring it out.
Do you have a sense of what your voice as a storyteller is?
Yeah, I'm starting to trust my voice. Actually, and that's one thing that's really helped me over the years is trust. And as my trust in myself and my choices and just trusting that I am worth something as a performer, as an artist, as I find my work gets better.
So would you say there's a particular actor or storyteller who inspires you in your own work?
It changes. It changes all the time. Like, I love to read. When I was in grade 5, I won the award for borrowing the most books in the library. So, you know, I love to read. And when you read, you find out about different writers. You find out about different actors. You find out about different people in the past and their stories. And so I get addicted to these people. So, you know, I'll find out about one person and then I'll read everything I can about them. I read about all their works. I read what they write. And then that will kind of, you know, obviously they've been influenced by other people. And because their passion, like, is so real and intoxicating, like, I read, I love ideas. Like, if ever I find myself feeling lonely or if ever I feel alone, which I think as artists we can feel alone, I read because it connects you to the writer. The writer can be from a different country. It can be from a different time. And then it connects you to the people that they're writing about. So it connects you to a whole culture. And then you feel, and I feel, like I'm part of a collective consciousness that transcends through space, transcends through time.
Perhaps.
So there's no one person that inspires me that I stick them on my wall because I find inspiration from everyone. So I find my friends inspiring, I find my mentors inspiring, I find my family's stories inspiring.
So if we go with this idea of how you were inspired and what we can learn from other people and other people's journeys, from everything you've experienced so far, if you had to pick something and you think, you know what, yeah, that really helped me. And if that thing hadn't happened, I wouldn't be where I am today. So maybe when other people are starting out, they could try this, or this is what yes. got me through, and this is the advice okay. I'd like to give to them.
Okay, well, I know that on my journey, I've been very fortunate, and I have a great team behind me who's, you know, who believes in me and, you know, and who works hard for me as I work hard for them and myself as well. But I guess the big thing is don't compare yourself. You are so different to everyone else, and you're so different to everyone else, and you are so special, and no one can be no one can replicate how special you are. And just put your head down and do the work. Just put your head down and do what you love. If you want to act, create a little piece of work, write something and do it. Yeah, get a friend, collaborate with a friend and find ways to actually do it and not waiting for someone to give it to you. And if your friends around you are getting work and you're not, it doesn't matter, because that's their journey. That's not your journey.
The lovely Anne Truong. What were your takeouts, Lauren?
Oh, it's so exciting. Oh, it's been really great. I love that we've interviewed Anne because, you know, obviously she's a female of a similar age. Like, I can really compare where I'm at in my... I know yes. she said don't compare. She did say that, didn't she? Ah!
That's right. But she is in a similar boat to where we are as well. And it's a lovely opportunity to see someone else's mindset that's really...
Yes, you know, and I think...
Appear.
I think mindset was my biggest take out from that, because not only is her attitude to the work fantastic, but just the way that she sees connectivity between the stories that we tell, that everywhere you look, you know, if she's sitting and watching a child, she can tap into their story and their perspective on the world, but also that she is actively training in her craft every day and doing it because she loves it. So it's not hard for her. I mean, I'm sure, you know, that's a very black and white statement, but, you know, that she's driven to do that every day because she loves it, not because it's something she necessarily feels that she has to do.
That's right.
Or that she should be doing.
And I think, just to come off the back of your point, I think she did have a beautiful sense of curiosity, is the word that I used, curiosity.
Yeah.
I underlined it here on my notes while we were talking to her. she has a wonderful curiosity that then informed her as she was growing up about who she was and how she fit into the world. And I think that's, you can tell that she's really starting to develop that sense and that essence of who she is and how she brings that to the work.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. Something that we were discussing, just of course, always the way after we stopped recording, she was talking again about her parents and and about what they gave to her. And I just, something I'd love to include because we didn't manage to get it, was this idea of freedom, that her parents left a war-torn country where they weren't free and they had to sacrifice so many of their own aspirations, but they did it for their children.
Yes.
And that sense of freedom is what drives her in everything. It's the freedom that they didn't have. So, and to make the most of it.
Once again, though, that comes down to mindset, and her mindset's so fantastic because you can see that as either a driving factor or a limiting factor. Some people see that as a very, very intense thing to have to deal with, you know, and can be limiting. But she's such a fantastic, positive person that she's really using it to drive her and make her career jump from success to success. Well, that was another great interview.
Woo-hoo.
I mean, there's so much that we want to cover, Lauren, in these interviews that sometimes we don't get it all in. And one was that we didn't really give enough detail for the show that Anne's performing in at the Meat Market for Melbourne Fringe this year.
Yes. And of course, we talked about it at the top of the interview and they're like, oh, we'll come back to this, and went down a million fascinating rabbit holes and never got there.
But we will now.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. So it's a fantastic show called No Punchline, which is inspired by female boxers from the early 1900s. And Anne and the people she's working with and the director are collaborating to develop a new performance that challenges traditional gendered ideas we have of feminine strength. And it also looks at femininity as being inherently physical and complicated and unexpected. And, you know, it sounds like a really fantastic project to me.
Oh, it sounds great. Like, I'm really excited just hearing that.
And I'm hoping she'll do the flag at some point.
Yeah, yeah, I hope so too. And I can do the triangle, which if they can get me up on stage. But no, I think it's important to remember they do have a Positable campaign and a Facebook page, which you can go along and like, and also donate some money if you like.
Yes. And just while we're talking about the interview that we did actually record at the meat market. And I just wanted to mention this because I know we talked a bit about what a great space it is. They've recently changed hands and are going to be doing a sort of a new online launch. Yes. I wanted to say thank you to Emma, Jai and Adrian who helped us out with recording on the day.
Thank you.
It's the meat market is such an important creative venue because they currently have over 25 resident artists and arts companies on site, but they also have really amazing spaces available for performance and are really keen to be fostering and supporting storytelling. So we'll make sure we keep an eye out for their launch and we'll put info up when we get our hands on it.
Yeah, it's been a really important venue in the past and I'm sure it will be into the future as far as helping artists and showcasing live art.
Yes. Is it time?
It is time, Lauren. I would like to hear about your recommendations.
Okay, well, I just have two quick recommendations this month. And one is following on from, I've been on a bit of a theme recently about writing and screenwriting. And through the fabulous Twitter sphere, we recently connected with another podcast called Draft Zero, which is Draft M-Zero. Mm-hmm. And they are a couple of screenwriters who are all about talking about what makes screenwriting work. Each podcast, they will look at a different angle of screenwriting and they'll mention the scripts that they're going to be looking at. They look at a lot of big films that we know and some small ones. So the ones I've listened to so far, they've covered things like Heat and The Matrix.
Oh, nice.
American History X. Yeah, there's some fantastic scripts and they dissect them sometimes with guests and sometimes just a conversation between the two of them to talk about how they work. And they're really fascinating and such a great resource for learning more about screenwriting. So I want to recommend them. And I noticed when I looked up their website earlier that they actually have a live episode of the podcast coming up at the St Kilda Film Festival on the 25th of this month. Yes. So that's really exciting. And I just love that sort of cross-platform idea. So I'll put details up about that.
Great to be supporting our storytelling brothers and sisters in the podcast world.
Yes. And then the other, it is great. Woo! Go team. And by team, I mean universe. And my other quick recommendation is this event that I was at last night. I was talking to a guy who's involved with a really interesting sounding project called Sound Walks.
Ooh.
That is part of the Melbourne Jazz Festival. And he's been running these for a few years. And the idea is that you turn up at the starting point for the tour.
Yes.
And he takes you on a walk through the city. And there's no communication while you're walking. And he said, look, you have to experience it to really appreciate it. But you're listening to the soundtrack of Melbourne.
That is amazing. Get me down to Melbourne right now. I want to take part. That's fantastic.
Well, that was pretty much my response, although I was clearly already in Melbourne.
Yeah.
But so I'm going to put, there's a few dates during the jazz festival and I'll chuck those up online. But that's my other recommendation because I just want to know what that's all about.
Two great recommendations, Lauren. Wow. This is a lot to live up to now for my recommendations.
Well, come on. What have you got?
Well, you know, I'm shouting out to previous podcast guests with the next couple of recommendations. I've got some based in Melbourne and some in Sydney. I want to quickly touch on the Melbourne side of things first with Fool for Love at Q44, the wonderful Sam Shepherd play. Q44 are putting it on from the 10th to the 28th of June. Sam Shepherd's one of my favourite playwrights. And I think it's going to be a great show. Q44 always do great work. So if you're in Melbourne.
And of course, directed by Gabriella Rose Carter.
Yes, indeed.
But the other thing that's really interesting about that show and good to talk about once we've seen it is The length of rehearsal. I know we discussed this when we were interviewing Gabby. How long? They must have been rehearsing for over a year now.
And I would say Beck, who's playing May, the one of the lead characters in that, has been working on that character for a couple of years. So that's an intense, intense character development.
Yeah.
I'll move on quickly because I've got a couple. Now we're moving to Sydney. The Sugar Syndrome by Lucy Prebble is being shown from the 17th to the 30th of June. Now, this is the King's Collective. We had... We had Dave Harrison on the show as a storyteller snapshot a little while back. And this is the King's Collective's first work for the year. And it's going to be happening at District 1 in Surry Hills. If you want some tickets, trybooking.com.au. It's a blackly comic and bravely provocative piece that explores the relationship between a troubled teenage girl and a child abuser she meets over the internet.
Wow.
Also, one more thing. You know I love a festival, Lauren. You know I love a festival. There's one of the best happening in Sydney from the 22nd of May to the 8th of June. It is Vivid. And of course, the bit that I would get you to check out is Vivid Live, which is particularly all those beautiful music performances by artists such as Sufjan Stevens, Daniel Johns, the list goes on. So get along, check out Vivid if you're in Sydney.
Well, that sounds pretty incredible. So how is your month ahead looking, Nick, off the back of everything we were, the rabbit holes we went down earlier in our intro?
Yeah, well, it's looking quite empty, but I am looking at doing a bit of training that I wanted to talk about. One of my remits for any money that I make when I'm working as an artist is to make sure that I invest it back in my skills in developing my craft. And I've just booked in to do character-based improvisation with our last guest, Rob Marchand. I was super excited after speaking to him, and I've just booked myself in for that that intensive.
Oh, I'm very envious.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's in Sydney, so... Also, I think it's a good time to shout out and say, if you do want to come along, email Erica at cbiworkshops@gmail.com. It's happening from the 26th to the 30th of June. It's a great opportunity to come along and meet me. Oh, and also study with Rob. as well as that...
Oh, we make ourselves laugh.
So well. We have to make someone laugh, don't we? As well as that, I'm going to be addicted to coffee by the end of this month, Lauren, because I'm going to try to catch up with everyone that I promised that I would catch up with once I moved to Sydney. So there's a few people, everyone's been so lovely suggesting people to meet up with. I'm actually going to do it this month, so that's great.
Wow. Well, you said it sounds like, actually sounds like a very busy month you've got ahead of you.
Yes, a lot of coffee.
A lot of coffee.
What about you, Lauren? What's your month looking like?
Well, of course, this month I'm off to Bali.
Yes.
Which is exciting to train with the wonderful Ali T. Miller.
Is this your third time?
This is my third time.
Fantastic.
And the exciting thing about this time is that I am, of course, going to be a test subject as part of his thesis experiment for his PhD, which, combines a lot of the training I've done previously and presumably takes it to another level. But anyway, I'm pretty excited. And of course, it will start with another climb of the volcano. Dun, dun, dun. So this week, I'm off in a week, and this week I'll be finishing off my training. That'll pretty much take me through most of the month.
That's a busy month, though. Climbing mountains.
So I'll leave it there. Climbing mountains. The other thing I'm very excited about is the responses we've had so far to our feedback survey.
So exciting. So we do have a survey out there at the moment, and it's a very short, sharp survey. We would love your feedback. So I think we should post that again, Lauren, because it's so lovely to hear back from people of what they're loving and also how we can improve.
Yeah, and it really helps us understand how people can utilize the podcast as much as possible as a creative resource, which is one of our sort of driving goals. Yep. So that's exciting. We will put it back on Facebook and we'll make sure it's on the website and about me so you can find it if you're looking for it.
Well, that draws us to the end of the podcast, Lauren. Another successful podcast done and dusted.
Fantastic. It's been lovely chatting to you on the interwebs, Nick.
On the interwebs.
I look forward to seeing seeing you next month. In the meantime, if anyone is looking for us, please feel free to continue having conversations with us on Facebook. Email us at theactofstorytelling@gmail.com with any ideas.
Follow us on Twitter. Twitter is actually going gangbusters for us, Lauren. There's a lot of people touching base, which is lovely.
Yeah, having some really interesting conversations on there. So keep that happening. Where else are we? About Me, SoundCloud. You'll find us. And thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.